I have a word and I call it trigger print. And I say we all have a fingerprint, but we have a trigger print. And our trigger print is a set of triggers within us. Some of them are common to other people. So the vast majority of people, if a snake is going across the table, we're all going to jump back and we're going to become fearful. Not everyone, but most of us. But then there are others that from childhood, adolescence, or even something that happened a month ago, that can begin to create pattern within us. And what happens, of course, is it's a stimulus and then we're reacting in a certain way. What's very powerful for any person, not just leaders, is to begin to explore those patterns and to be curious about them and to think about how often have they happened and how far can I go back to explore them.
This is the Mindshift Podcast, where we share real stories, real strategies that will help you find real success. This is the place to hear from people just like you who have taken their ideas, goals, and dreams from a point of inspiration to realization, or when life knocked them down, from a point of breakdown to breakthrough. I'm your host, Darrell Evans. Let's get started with today's episode. Hey, my friend, how you doing? Welcome to the Mindshift Podcast, where every week on this show, our goal is to help you shift your mind so you can shift your results in your business and your life. If you've not done so already, hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening to the show so that you never miss an episode. And after you enjoy today's show, DM me on Instagram at Mr. Darrell Evans and let me know your biggest mind shift from today's show. Listen, if this is your first time here, my name is Darrell Evans. I'm a serial entrepreneur who started his first business at the age of 20. I've now gone on to build several successful businesses across the seven-figure mark. And through my digital marketing agency, we've now helped clients generate over nine figures in revenue over the last 11 years. While the journey from inspiration to realization is fun to talk about, it's actually when life knocked me down that I learned some of my biggest success lessons. Here at Mindshift, we call those breakdowns. Now, it's those breakdowns that led me to develop a framework called the Mindshift Method. It's a four-step framework I use anytime I get stuck, I need to overcome a major life challenge or a business challenge, or if I want to pursue a new career path or desire of any kind. You know, I used this when I was sleeping on my grandmother's couch, living out of two duffel bags of clothes, when I was starting one of my first successful businesses. I used it when I faced the reality that I'd have to figure out how to be a good father to my two boys at the time, who were living 1,075 miles away from me. I used it when my business collapsed in 2008 and I had to file bankruptcy and I lost everything and I had to start over again. It wasn't until 2020 when something else happened and someone asked me, how do you do it? How do you remain so calm through adversity? How do you keep a positive outlook when facing what would take most other people out? And what I didn't realize at that time was I've been using this framework unconsciously for like the last two decades. That conversation, though, led me to break down this four-step framework, and I share it with all of the members of the Mindshift community. The Mindshift community is my free coaching community where you can gather with us every single month for a free live masterclass. You also get access to me for monthly Q&As, and you even get exclusive discounts on merch, programs, and events not available to the general public. The best part is, it's 100% free to join. In another tab, really quick, go to mindshiftcommunity.com. That's mindshiftcommunity.com to join for free, and I'll see you inside the community. My guest today believes that leadership development is a journey from the inside out. If our emotional intelligence is lacking, then any new business skill we attempt to implement will be adversely impacted. As such, he has spent most of his career helping leaders harness the power of their emotions so they can have deeper connections, make better decisions, and increase their influence. Born in Northern Ireland and growing up in a society torn apart by division and violence, Irvin Nugent has seen firsthand the damage done when communication breaks down and people fail to listen and understand. This has inspired him to help leaders build workplaces in which people thrive and realize their full potential. He is the author of the book, Leadership Lessons from the Pub, and he says he has a call to help people discover the superpower they have in their emotions. to help people and leaders connect on a deeper level and build bridges and not walls. Here's my conversation with Irvin. Irvin, how you doing? Welcome to the Mindshift Podcast.
Daryl, great to be here. Thanks so much for the invitation.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. We're going to have a really interesting conversation. I have been fascinated by this topic in my work, and I'm really looking forward to talking to a thought leader in this area around emotional intelligence. But before we jump into all of that, tell our audience where you're joining us from.
Calling today from Washington, D.C.
By way of?
By way of Northern Ireland. I grew up there, so I'm from Northern Ireland originally.
That's awesome.
Although I've been longer here than over there.
Give our audience the short background. Tell everyone who Irvin is.
I specialize in, as you said, in emotional intelligence. I have been intrigued since my childhood. I grew up in a violent society, the Troubles, as we called them, in Northern Ireland. And I placed in my heart a desire to really look in depth into what motivates us, and emotion comes there. And so I've turned that presently into working with leaders, and I work with them delving into their emotional lives, how they can use emotions to be better leaders and really help people, as I say, to build bridges and not walls.
Really interesting. Let's start with the basic definition in your words. What is the basic definition of emotional intelligence?
So I think a great way to understand emotional intelligence is by actually what emotionally intelligent people can do. And I would say there are four things. One is they are self-aware. They understand what emotions they're having in the moment, what triggers them. Secondly, knowing that, they have tools to manage their emotions so that they can use that emotion in the moment to the best outcome. Third thing is they're able to read other people's emotions and show empathy to build connection. And then the fourth thing is they use all of that to build solid relationships and also have relationships which have a positive outcome.
And obviously the next segue there is then, why is this such a big deal today? You know, why are we not talking about, well, I'm the boss, you do what I say? What's changed in the leadership role that makes this idea of emotional intelligence so critical in today's workplace?
So I would just say two things. One is, if you ask anyone to think about the most memorable leader that you have in your life, what made them memorable? Very often the things they're going to list to you are all categories of emotional intelligence. Oh, they were supportive. They were caring. They were listening. They were understanding. They were challenging. And then the second thing is that in the workplace today, the days when you could command and it was obeyed are over. You know, we have another generation who are looking for other things. They're looking for a sense of belonging. They're looking for a sense of inclusion. And they're looking for a workplace where their voice is heard. And all of that, of course, is based on relationship, which is in the core of emotional intelligence.
Interesting question that pops to mind when I think about the workforce. You know, we have a team that spans all generations. And I think about the generation, let's just deem it the baby boomer generation, that has, in many cases, not so nice things to say about the millennial generation. I seem to get left out. Like the Gen X group, they seem to like us all right, you know. But what do you say to the leader who is the baby boomer and has to or is confronted with this new generation, and there's complete distinctions in behavioral patterns, psychology, desire for future outcome, but it's the baby boomer sort of senior leader and the millennial team member, staff, employee? Where's the gap? Where's the problem lie initially?
You know, I think the problem lies in times we have different values. So I think it's important. First of all, we grew up at different times. And in the age that we grew up, we were marked by different events. And those events place in us, I feel, different values in what is important. And I think we forget that. I think we forget the fact, what I always say to leaders is just be curious, ask questions. You know, and so often we settle down into you're not doing this or you're not doing that. And instead of it is, you know, talk to me a little bit about what's important for you. Why is it important? You know, the why question, the deeper. And I think what normally happens is, you know, when you bring down and have some open conversations from some of these different generational groups, it's amazing then as they hear the stories that they begin to appreciate each other. And then I think that better positions us for what we're asking, why we're asking, and it really helps in the relationship.
You make a great point about growing up at different times and experiencing different things. I can think back to a course that I took, and they were talking about the silent generation, which in my life is my grandmother, my grandparents, and coming out of World War One into World War Two, and the Depression, and some of the teaching and some of the guidance and some of the parenting was based on what they saw. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I actually sort of saw that as I grew up, and my parents, based on them being boomers, growing up underneath that sort of economic situation. And of course, we had socioeconomic situations, civil unrest, that guided their discussions. Let's bring it to the workplace, though. So I love the first thing you said about self-awareness. So what do you do with a leader who's self-aware that they are a jerk, or self-aware that they are aware that they don't care what the other generation thinks? I mean, I see this play out in different clients that we work with, and I'm just really interested from the guy who has to teach people through this and guide them through it. What do you do with that person who's self-aware that they just don't care?
First of all, I'd say that to me is progress, because very often what I deal with, first of all, is they are unself-aware that this is. So I think, Daryl, I always bring it down to, you know what? What's the outcome you're looking for? What is it you want at the end of the day? And so I want this to be done, that to be done, that. Okay, we're agreed that this is what you want done. Well, how are you going to get there? Because if you can try it your way, and what you are going to have is a set of different roadblocks along the way, and your role will be frustrated. And very often now, you've got the risk of losing staff, and that's a huge deal for, you know, because the most expensive part of any business is retraining and hiring. Or you can be curious and maybe think about different ways of doing it. But ultimately, you know, I always bring people like that, I bring to the bottom line. What is the bottom line? And if you're looking for this bottom line, then the way you're going about it, you're not going to get there.
Yeah. Do you find at all that, and I'm going to use a very simple word, where does empathy play into this journey in leadership relating to this emotional intelligence topic? Does it play in your mind?
Massive. Okay. Empathy is massive. The ability, you know, and very often we think of empathy as a very soft word. And we think, oh, you're very empathetic. And we think of people being, oh, you're a pushover and things like that. And I always say, you know, empathy is a superpower because, you know, you can show different types of empathy, but at the very least you have to, what I call cognitive empathy. You have to be able to know what another person is going through and to understand that. Because I like to say, you know, there's a lot of hunger in the world today. And in some countries, it's for food. But for most people, it's to be listened to.
Yeah.
And we live in a super fast world. And to be listened to can really change a person's day. And also, as a leader, gives you incredible data that's useful.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think empathy is a baseline for understanding how to meet people where they are. Because if ultimately you're a leader, you've got a goal that you're after, a mission you're trying to accomplish. If you're leading people appropriately, hopefully their destiny is in your hands and they need to get something out of that journey as well. And I think empathy is just finding that, where's that ground where you're committed to what I'm committed to, and then let me help you get what you need so that we can get what we need together. And it's just a short, I don't want to end up on a tangent there, but I love what you said about that. I loved also something I found in your bio, which I use the phrase superstar DNA. And in my world, I say that every human being has a superstar, definite natural ability. And I saw that somewhere on your website or in your bio that you really believe you help people discover their superstar power that they have in their emotions. Tell me a little bit about why you see it that way.
I work with a lot of leaders who actually have, and society in general can be very negative about emotional. So you think how we use the word, oh, you're very emotional, which means you're kind of out of control.
Right.
And we have to keep it logical. Mm. And I always say, you know what? Our emotions are essential to our humanity, and we cannot divorce them from being human.
Wow.
And the more we understand them, and the more we understand that they're there to help us, and the more tools we feel that we can manage them in the moment, it's such an incredible superpower. It can change from you walking into a meeting and being unself-aware, and someone has annoyed you and triggers you and you scream at them, to walking into a meeting and being aware, oh, this person may trigger me. They always do. And when it happens, to be able to do something like take a breath or to step back, and then to be deliberate in your response. And that's huge.
Irvin, take us back to your first leadership position. How old were you? And tell us a little bit about the role that you first found yourself a leader in.
Good question. I would say more formal leadership. Actually, in the first part of my career, I was a Catholic priest for 10 years.
Okay, I'd call that leadership.
Yeah, I was a head pastor of a very large community of 6,000 people. And so I was kind of thrown into the deep end.
Oh, wow.
So that was an incredible experience of leading and listening.
I love that. I grew up Catholic. And so that's an interesting role to have. If you don't mind me asking, what changed from pastoral to the, you know, more the executive side of leadership?
Yeah. So the way I like to explain it is, you know, the church didn't change. I did. And I just think at that stage, there were different priorities in my life in different ways. And for me, that required kind of transitioning out. Mm-hmm. I thought I kind of wanted to be married, et cetera, and just that wasn't compatible with that role. I had a great 10 years and I loved the work that I did. Yeah. And then as I transitioned out, I took over a CEO of a number of large social service agencies. And then that got me into the role that I'm presently in, working with executive leaders.
Nice. I know you do some work with DISC.
Mm-hmm.
And how you use DISC to help with communication amongst teams. I've been involved myself with DISC since 2004, mm-hmm. so I'm very clear about what it is. But for our audience, explain what DISC is and how you use it in your leadership and adaptation with team communication.
So I think DISC is an assessment which helps people become more aware of their behavioral and communication styles. And it's split into, because of its title, four different styles, D-I-S-C. And depending on the assessment, you tend to have a home base, as I like to call it, in one of those styles. I think what's so powerful about the assessment is it's quite a simple assessment, and I mean that in a good way. And I think what happens is that I find in organizations is that people begin to learn a language of how to describe what's going on. And very often when there's communication breakdown, I find one of the issues with that is people don't have the words to describe what's happening and they struggle to put language around it. And when you bring something like the DISC into an organization, it can be incredibly powerful because people then have a common language and then are able to explore what's happening around that. It's a very positive assessment. It doesn't say what you're doing wrong. It says what might be some issues for you, but it tends to be on the whole a very positive assessment. And I love it. I enjoy using it.
Yeah, my experience with it is as an individual who was given the assessment when I was first in a coaching program. So my coach gave it to me and I didn't quite understand what we were doing it for, but I ended up figuring out that what he was learning to do was he was trying to figure out how to best coach me by understanding how I communicated. What was my personality? What were my tendencies? What is my natural sort of tendency out of the DISC format? And that would help him adapt his style to me. Later, I figured out how powerful that was. There is something about DISC for those who may not have done it. By the way, I recommend that everyone do it for themselves, even if you're not in leadership, because you'll learn some things about yourself. And the one thing I want to ask you about, since you do have some experience, and we'll go back to EI, is when you look at the results, you see things like your natural style and then your adapted style. Mm-hmm. And what I took from that was it was very interesting to say, here's how you are naturally mm-hmm. based on your answers, but here's how you actually perform under pressure or when you are in a certain environment. You actually may change to do something different. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I thought it was one of the most fascinating adaptations. And then I've got a second question to that, but talk a little bit about that adapted versus, and I might have the words wrong, I apologize, your natural versus your adapted style.
And it depends on the DISC assessment that you do. Some kind of use that explicitly, others don't. But I think it's the understanding, you know, that when everything is going right and you're in a calm state, there is a way of functioning. But I think it's very important to realize that, especially in the world of work, that is no longer the case. There is a lot of pressure on us. There's a lot of stress. And sometimes when we are stressed, or even going back to the EI language, when we're emotionally triggered, that can bring out another set of behaviors. And the other thing is sometimes the workplace culture is very different mm-hmm. to a home culture. And so we're in a culture where we've learned to adapt to that culture. And so we know that there are certain ways of behaving. And sometimes people have been in jobs 10, 12 years. And so that has become a new habit. And so some people will say, you know, well, at certain work, I turn up a certain way, but when I go home, I'm a different person. And really, that's a reality of what's happening.
It's very interesting what I've learned. And it's not the only type of assessment that you can use out there as leaders. There are obviously a lot of them, but I love what you said about that. Let me ask you, let's get a little bit more into emotions. And let me ask this question. People come to our work environment and we have lives outside of it. And I know that you've got a thought around emotional triggers. And sometimes those triggers come from our personal lives, our past, relationships, you know, something when we grew up when we were a kid. Mm-hmm. Talk about these triggers as it relates to the work environment and how you help leaders deal with those things they can't see. I'm going to give it a perfect example. And maybe you've seen it in your work. I'd imagine you have if you've been doing it 15 years with your leaders. I've got for someone in my mind, I know is a strong communicator, a strong strategist at what they do, knowledgeable. I call them really expert technicians is sort of my label. And then we ask that person for feedback on a project, a key aspect of a project, and we get nothing. But then we have a roundtable discussion about the direction of where the project's going, and they'll say something like, yeah, I was thinking about that, but we never heard it. And it's interesting because this is my assumption. I can't make for sure that this is the case, but it's almost as if there's been a time in the past where they were punished for speaking up. And that's just one example in my 20 years that I can think back to that really just was interesting to me. But how do you deal with managing emotional triggers when they've come from somewhere else?
Yeah, so I have a word and I call it trigger print. And I say we all have a fingerprint, but we have a trigger print.
I like that.
And our trigger print is a set of triggers within us. Some of them are common to other people. So the vast majority of people, if a snake is going across the table, we're all going to jump back and we're going to become fearful. Not everyone, but most of us. But then there are others that from childhood, adolescence, or even something that happened a month ago, that can begin to create a pattern within us. And what happens, of course, is it's a stimulus and then we're reacting in a certain way. What's very powerful for any person, not just leaders, is to begin to explore those patterns and to be curious about them and to think about how often have they happened and how far can I go back to explore them? So, you know, riffing off of your example, Daryl, I was working with a client like 2 months ago, and what happened is she used to have a meeting and there was a particular person there who would shut her down. And wouldn't do in an offensive way, but would just talk over her. And she got triggered and said nothing and just shut down. The more we explored, you know, she grew up and she can remember being told at the table not to talk, to be kind of shut down. And so she carries this. And so part of that, first of all, is just to be aware because, you know, when more aware, things don't have a bind over us. And then the second thing I always say to people, what's the cost? So what's the cost of you not speaking up in that meeting? And just for your client, what's the cost of you maybe not sharing information at a certain time? And then the other thing then is to reimagine a different outcome. I believe in the power of visualization. I think it's a great power. And so I use that technique with her to visualize her reacting in a different way to that meeting. You know, one of the things we worked at was that she would walk in and a person kind of started speaking. And then she just became a little more assertive and said, actually, I'm sorry. I'm actually not finished. There's something I need to say.
Wow.
So, you know, the triggers, we're not slaves of triggers. We can actually reformulate them and turn them into something we have power over.
I like that. And I think that speaks to how we can get better at managing our own emotions in an environment is being aware of those. I love you keep coming back to self-awareness because I tell people all the time that I think leadership is, it might be the number one thing in leadership is to be self-aware because even when you're moving off track, it takes your awareness to get back on track. It takes your awareness to know you're moving a little far left, a little far right. So I love that you keep bringing that word back up. I want to ask you about your book. You've got a book that you wrote. And it's called Leadership Lessons from the Pub. So what on earth does the pub have anything to do with leadership?
Good question. I grew up in a pub in Northern Ireland during the time of the violence there. And we were very impacted as my family at the age of 6. It was blown up in a terrorist bombing.
Oh.
But, you know, as I reflected on where leaders are today, I kept hearing the same things. You know, I'm having a problem with engagement. I'm trying to create this space where people want to belong. We're having high turnover and all these issues. And I'm sure you've heard them too. And the more I thought about my experience of growing up in a pub, I said, here's this space where for hundreds of years, people have wanted to go. Where they go there, they call it their local, at least in Ireland and England, they do. And there's a space there that's really interesting because people go and they have these conversations that are vulnerable. These conversations where you don't have to come in with your errors and graces. You can come with your warts. You don't have to be this perfect person. You share the stories that went wrong and you get support. And I'm thinking there is something special in this place that I think can teach leaders a lot about the spaces that work needs to become.
Wow. Safe space.
Yeah.
I love what you said. You can come in with your warts.
Yeah, totally.
Never heard it that way. That's a good one. Leaders are in a really tough role today to almost be like mind readers. Let's just say, even if they've taken DISC, even if, you know, in my world, we use Colby. Are you familiar with Colby A Index?
I am, yeah, a little bit, yeah.
So there's lots of them out there.
Yeah.
They're all helpful, but they all just are tools. It's still up to the leader to have that capacity, right? To understand where they're going and who is on the team. I make a joke that when I grew up, I used to watch this show called Gilligan's Island. And it was a show, you know, I think it was in the 70s and 80s. I don't know actually when it went off air, but I remember the jingle forever. And it was, the weather started getting rough. The tiny ship was tossed. And if not for the courage of the fearless crew, the minnow would be lost. And the joke of the jingle for me is that as a leader in the last 20 years running companies, is there are times when the weather will start to get a little rough. And your tiny ship, your company, will be tossed. And in my world, I've seen people decide they've put up their white flag and they've called for the Coast Guard and they've got off the boat. Other people try to hide in the back. Where am I going with this? My question is about leadership and how do we read the emotions and the body language of our employees, our team members, when sometimes these emotional triggers could be buried deep and they really don't want to talk to you about them. Talk to us a little bit about how the task that we have as leaders to really understand what our team is feeling emotionally when, you know, the ship is tossing, and that means turbulence in whatever that means inside of your business, who's listening to this. But I want to throw that over to you, Irvin. What are your thoughts on the challenge to really, really understand our people's emotions?
First of all, I think to recognize that there's an acronym that was created actually by the War College to describe what would happen after the Cold War. And they said that the world would be, or at least geopolitically, would be a VUCA world, V-U-C-A, which stands for volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. Mm. And boy, does that nail the business world. Just to recognize that even if your business is doing well, the background to all business at the moment is this uncertainty, this volatility, this complexity. Mm-hmm. So first of all, recognize that people don't do well in that. As human beings, we're created to be safe and we're created to protect ourselves. So to understand that people are adapting to this situation. And I think therefore, as leaders, we have to really garnish as much information as we can from the people in front of us. Mm-hmm. So a couple of things. One is, it is possible to read people's faces. That's what I teach, you know, are the emotions that show in our faces. To be aware that at times that people react in different ways to these stresses and to be curious about how they're reacting. I mean, a great example, this past year in COVID, you know, the majority of workers had to work from home. And how people reacted to that was so different. Mm-hmm. And I met a few leaders that had made assumptions about how they thought people were reacting, and it was totally wrong. So I think at times, I think what we have to do is we have to create spaces where people feel that they can build trust, that they can talk about what's happening. We have to learn signals, body language signals as well, both in the face and the body. And I think the way I like to talk about, is this person in comfort or distress? And it's pretty clear, you know, non-verbally, that's a nice way of looking at it. Mm. And then knowing if we're seeing kind of some of the distress or unease, to be able to kind of ask some really great questions around that so that we can begin to elicit some more information.
Do you find that that's easier in a virtual environment? Is that what you're referring to, like in this last 12 months or so that we have been on COVID? Are you looking for that comfort and distress through like a virtual Zoom meeting? Or is that...
Well, one of the things through Zoom, you can see it. So that's great. It's much better than the phone. So you can see that. But referring to like, even like, you know, I was working for a large company that had employees all over the company. And so here you had two similar people with two children. One was based in New York and the other was based somewhere in Kentucky. Both were having a different experience because one was living in a space of 800 square feet in New York and the other had a single family home with some space. So understanding some of that background really helps you then understand, you know, maybe how people might be showing up, some of the things that they're showing.
Talk to the leader right now who maybe is self-aware that they could use a couple more points in the EI emotional intelligence score. Just a small little bit of coaching here. Where would you tell them to begin. The admission is, okay, Irvin, yeah, I don't know if I've been the best with recognizing in my team's emotions and trying to adapt, but they're self-aware and they want to elevate just a little bit through today's discussion. Where would you have them begin?
So first of all, I would just say mindset. And I would say, if you want to grow your EQ, there's two elements of mindset that are required. One is humility, in the sense of that to know that our emotions, we're never fully masters of our emotions. And so just have the humility to recognize that you may be tired, you may be hungry, and perhaps, you know, your behaviors weren't the best, and that's okay. And the second mindset is curiosity, to be always curious about what's happening within us. So that's the others. And then the other thing is take some practical steps to be able to read other people. You know, you can train to read emotions in people's faces. You can train to learn some body language as well and some signs. And that's just like turning on two new sets of data that you didn't have before.
I think about leadership in relationship to like what you're talking about, this body language, because I think sometimes as leaders, we just ignore what we see in the sign. And the sign is staring us right in the face. And sometimes the sign has nothing to do with your work. Sometimes it's nothing to do with the task that they're assigned to do. It is something that happened in another place of their life. And that whether it was a distant place or a most recent place. And I think that's where that piece as a leader comes in. I want to ask about the book. What made you write the book? And tell us a little bit about that journey, because I know writing books is not easy.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I was going to write another book, and then my heart wasn't in it. And actually, how this book came was very funny. I said, you know, I think I need to go back to Ireland and just spend a little time there. And so this is about 4 months before COVID. I actually got there. And as we were landing in Dublin, I just got this inspiration to visit my childhood places.
Oh.
And I reoriented my whole trip and went back to where the old pub was, etc. And it became a much more personal story. So there's a lot of me in the book, which I wasn't planning to have initially. And I think the emphasis for me is, in some way, it's an extension of my mission. And so I truly believe that if people can become more emotionally intelligent, that we have better conversations, that we can deal with conflict in a constructive way, that we have healthier workplaces, we have healthier families. And if I can be a little part in achieving that, then I've done well in my mission. And so the book for me became an extension of that.
Wow, I love that. For those listening who want to go deeper in this conversation, find out more about your work, find out more about elevating their EQ. And I apologize, I think I was calling it EI earlier. How would they connect with you?
My website is my name, irvinnugent.com. There's information there on the book and information on all the different training courses. I also have a YouTube channel, and every Wednesday, I have a 10-minute educational session on a different topic of EQ in the workplace. So that's another place as well to connect and do a little deeper dive into the world of emotional intelligence.
I love it. We'll link everything up in the show notes. We'll link up a link to your book, the YouTube channel, as well as your website, all of the other goodies that I know our team has received from you. Irvin, I always like to thank leaders for stepping into a place to make a difference. And that's what I love about talking with guests like you on the show. Continue the great work that you're doing. And again, I believe everyone's journey has brought them to a place where they're taking their unique gift and spreading it out in the world. So thank you so much for doing that work and helping leaders build better environments. And if we build up ourselves, we can build better people and help them fulfill their destiny. So thank you so much for that work. Last question I always like to ask to really figure out what that deep underlying mission is for you. And you might have already covered it, but if for whatever reason, just couldn't be here on this planet we love tomorrow, what would you want everyone to remember you by?
I think I want them to remember me by my smile, and that here goes someone who always tried to build a bridge and not a wall.
So awesome. Irvin Nugent, thank you for being on the Mindshift podcast.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Hey, my friend, thanks again for listening to today's episode of the Mindshift podcast. Listen, let's not have the conversation end here. Connect with me on social at Mr. Darrell Evans on almost all the platforms, with the exception of Facebook. My Facebook fan page is at Darrell Evans Fan. Until next week, remember, you're just one shift away from the breakthrough you're looking for.